Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week. I'm Carrie Weber, and I'm joined by Father Matt Malone and Father Eric Sundrup. And we have been talking about the news at the intersection of the church and the world. In particular, we were just speaking about the bishops' conference meetings and the sense of history that comes with those. We also mentioned a few articles, one of which we didn't have the title for before the break, but now we do. It's by Father John Strinkowski. It's an open letter to Father Wynandy from his predecessor, Anna Morris Letizia, and Pope Francis. So you can find that at americamagazine.org. And so as we talked about the history of the Bishops' Conference, the way in which our church has kind of been, and the conference has evolving in the light of history, The kind of underlying message is not to ignore that history, right? Because we need it in order to move forward in a real and productive way. And that's also the message of a new film out right now, right? So we have this piece about Thor Ragnarok, which I think
We've been practicing that.
Thor colon Ragnarok. Whether it's Thor's Asgard
this
or
our
America.
This is an extraordinary segue, by the way.
The history you've been taught is a lie. So this is the title of a piece by Megan Clark at our website, americamagazine.org, which Eric has seen. And you, why don't you introduce it to
us? They're both Matt, Carrie and Father
and
Matt
are
looking at me like, this is you.
We had to learn how to say Ragnarok, and we don't really know much about this film. But I'm sure a lot of people do, because these superhero films are very popular.
Yes,
so
the ball is in your court.
Yeah.
We do not even have
this.
A court. No,
it's just like The Office. Wait, this is about a superhero. You edit.
No, I went out and saw this movie actually with a couple of members of our staff, just because we wanted to look at it after Megan had approached us and said, I think there's something very interesting here other than, you know, like your normal escapist Marvel comic. By the way, Disney, way to go on buying all the Marvel stuff. They seem to really be making plenty of time with us.
Yeah.
This.
Well, they know how to make time and money.
And money, yeah. There's a lot going on. It's actually quite humorous. The movie, if you know this comic universe, they pull in a lot of decent jokes and what's going on. But one of the things that's happening is Thor discovers after his older sister shows up that he didn't know existed, that the history that he had been taught about Asgard and the whole you know, how it came to control the Nine Realms is a lie. And there was a violent history to this, and he finds himself and his brother Loki. So you got the Norse gods and Norse mythology going on here. Very ill-equipped to handle, you know, what is coming at them and all the challenges they're facing, because they hadn't learned what really was the history and what was going on, and their father had never really told them about that. So there's a moral in here that Megan's pulling out, which I think is great, that we do need to understand our history, and we need to do some reconciliation and understand the demons and the sins that are part of our history, and not sort of paper over them or pretend they're not there or tell stories to kind of you know, wash over them. And the analysis she's bringing forth is this is something that's extremely important to you know, the United States in this moment. We need to understand all of the sins and problems that have existed for a long time and that we have been built on. And this can be a very difficult process. But if we don't do this, we are not going to be equipped to deal with what's happening in front of us, because we're going to be pretending we can't acknowledge it, or we're trying to pretend it comes from a place that, you know, we have no knowledge or access to. So this sense of, and you see this when, like, you have a country recovering from a difficult experience of civil war or something, you tend to have a truth and reconciliation setup of some sort. You have to acknowledge what happened, and you have to work from a place of truth. And so she points out a couple places here where, you know, it's important for Americans to take a look at our history and understand what's going on there, so that we can deal with what's going on. This, you know, this sense of the rise of white supremacy and what's showing up there, we need to acknowledge the racism, slavery, and be willing to look into those things and address that.
Yeah. I mean, if we want to know where we're going, we have to know where we've come from, right?
Mm-hmm.
And look, Dr. Clark does really great work here in being a theologian and applying ethical principles and theological constructs to a popular culture. And I encourage people to check it out because it's really fun. Whether it's Thor's Asgard or Our America, the history you've been taught is a lie. And her last line is, Asgard isn't the only empire built on convenient myths. It's interesting. And not a bad segue to our guest, who is joining us to talk about some of the ways that Hispanics are redefining American Catholicism in the 21st century, and some of the ways that may not be fully appreciated by everybody.
Right. Dr. Hosmano Ospino is an associate professor of Hispanic ministry and religious education at Boston College. And he does research that concentrates on the dialogue between theology, culture, the impact of this interchange on Catholic theological education, catechesis, ministry. And he's really pulled a lot of his expertise together in this piece, which we've mentioned before, 10 Ways Hispanics Are Redefining American Catholicism in the 21st Century. Dr. Ospino, thank you so much for being with us, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I had the pleasure of hearing you speak at the Convocation of Catholic Leaders, where you were a keynote this summer in Orlando, Florida. And you spoke on some of the changes in the church there to a pretty diverse group with a talk that rightly so received a standing ovation. It's a topic that I think is close to the heart of a lot of people because they either see it happening and are not sure how to respond as a church as a change, or they feel like they're helping to bring about some change, and or their families are part of that change, and hope that the church can learn how to kind of adapt to the changing, specifically within the demographics. And in your article, you talk about one particular city as a kind of interesting example of this, as a microcosm. You talk about Lawrence, Massachusetts. It's this town in New England. It has about 80,000 people. And not too long ago, 15 Catholic churches, none of which were established to serve Hispanic churches. And today there are 3 Catholic parishes left, and they all celebrate several Spanish masses every week. And this was about over the course of 50 years. So can you kind of help put this into context for us? How does this sort of microcosm of the church represent what's going on in the church as a whole?
Sure. Well, what's fascinating is that, you know, Latinos have been in this country for, 500 years, and certainly the oldest Catholic group in our territory. And we tend to think of Hispanics as, just newcomers.
Right.
And but what we need to keep in mind, is that there's a long history of the Latino presence, and particularly it's in the last century, where we have seen major migration waves from Latin America and the Spanish-speaking Caribbean, arriving in this in this country. Most of these people are Catholic, so I mean, it's estimated that about 20-25 million people from Latin America and the Caribbean have migrated in the last few decades, and most of these people are Catholic. So I mean, when they start settling in neighborhoods, and in cities like Lawrence, Massachusetts, which tends to attract a largely Dominican and Puerto Rican population, then, the first thing that they do is just go and look for a church, and they settle in these churches and in these communities. They ask for services in Spanish. They want to do quinceañeras. They want to do baptisms for their children and so forth. And then, I mean, all of a sudden, you just realize that half of the work you're doing in your parish is with the Hispanic community. In some of those communities, there is a little bit of a white flight. Those more established Catholics, they realize that this is not their church anymore. This is not the Irish church or the German church in which they grew up. And then they decide to move on to other churches, or maybe some of them just stop practicing, their faith. And then we find, this entire process of Hispanization of Catholicism in the United States, to the point that about 43-45% of all Catholics in this country today are Hispanic, and about 4,500 parishes nationwide are serving Hispanic Catholics, largely in Spanish.
Right. You write that Hispanics account for 71% of the growth of the Catholic population in the U.S. since 1960, which is a huge percentage.
It is. Well, I mean, the numbers pretty much, you know, tell us that if it were not for Hispanics and if it were not for the Hispanic immigrant population and their children, because sometimes we just get caught up only on the immigrant population, but Latinos have one of the highest, you know, birth rates of all the groups in our society. So if it were not for these Latinos, you know, and their children, then the Catholic Church in the United States would be about half its size today.
Right, which is really an extraordinary thing to think about, and yet that population is very underrepresented in Catholic schools.
It is, Father Malone. And what's fascinating is that, you know, when if one were to see Catholicism in the form of a pyramid, you know, and having at the bottom of the pyramid the regular Janes and Jones, Marias and Joses, you know, that go to church and baptize their kids every day and so forth, and then moving to the top in terms of leadership, not only in terms of priests and sisters, and you know, but also including Catholic school teachers and including university professors and theologians and so forth. So the more one goes to the levels of leadership, you know, the less Hispanic, you know, the pyramid looks like. So technically what we have is a church, you know, that is at the very bottom, at the grassroots, very diverse, very Hispanic in many parts of the country, particularly the South and the West and in the largest cities throughout the country. But then, you know, most are not, unfortunately, most Hispanic children are not in Catholic schools, are not in Catholic universities. Most of the clergy is not Hispanic, and most of the sisters in this country are not Hispanic. Most of the theologians are not Hispanic, and so forth. And I could go on and on and on.
Right.
So that's the challenge that we have right now. How do we get these people from the grassroots, you know, eventually to start permeating and transforming, you know, the leadership structures of the Catholic Church in the U.S.
Yeah, I was really struck by that more than half of school-age children who are Catholic are Hispanic, and yet they're something like 10% of the school population. Why is it? Why do we have these great disparities?
Well, I think that on the one hand, you know, we need to understand that Catholic schools, you know, I mean, we went from having about 13,000 plus Catholic schools in the United States down to less than half of that number, you know, about 6,700 or so. And so we have fewer of those Catholic schools. And then most of those schools are located in the Northeast and the Midwest, you know, where Latinos are present, of course, but not in the large numbers and vast numbers as they are in the South and the West. So literally what we have is an enormous need for Catholic education in the South and the West, you know, because we got all these children. We got millions of Hispanic Catholic children waiting for a Catholic education. But unfortunately, we don't have the resources, one, to get these children into those schools because Catholic education has become very expensive, you know. And two, we don't have enough Catholic schools, you know, in the South and the West to actually meet the needs. The other thing is that, you know, many immigrants, and this is, you know, changing little by little, but many immigrants arrive in the United States with the idea that Catholic education is not for them, that Catholic education is for the wealthy, because that's pretty much what happens in many parts of Latin America. So there is not a culture of Catholic, you know, education, and that's what needs to be fostered among the new immigrants.
And it's so important because, as you write in this piece, a majority of U.S. Catholics under 18 are Hispanic. So this school-age population is making up the most of young Catholics.
Yes, but this is not, I mean, certainly my primary concern is the Hispanic community, and it should be the primary concern of the entire church because the majority, you know, I mean, 60% of all Catholics under 18 are Hispanic, you know. But this is not only about Hispanic kids, you know. We also know that very few Catholic children as a whole, including white Catholic children, black Catholic children, Asian Catholic children, and so forth, are actually going to Catholic schools. You know, I think that this is something that I hope that in the 21st century, as a church, you know, we kind of we could motivate a new generation or a new wave of initiative spaces for young Catholics, you know, Hispanic and others, to benefit from the beauty of Catholic education. We did it in the past, you know, with very few resources,
right.
And I think that we can do it today.
You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. We are talking with Hoffman Ospino about his piece in America Magazine called 10 Ways Hispanics Are Redefining American Catholicism in the 21st Century, which you can find at americamagazine.org. I also love the fact that you led with Lawrence, Massachusetts. I used to work in Lawrence, Massachusetts. I worked for the congressman who represented Lawrence, Massachusetts. And you are right, it is the great immigrant city. I always tell people both Robert Goulet and Leonard Bernstein were from Lawrence, Massachusetts, both children of immigrants, French-Canadian and Jewish.
We are speaking with Dr. Hoffman Ospino, who's an associate professor of Hispanic ministry and religious education at Boston College. And he's talking about his article in the recent issue of America Magazine called 10 Ways Hispanics Are Redefining American Catholicism in the 21st Century. And you can find that online at americamagazine.org. And before the break, we were talking a bit about the need to get more kids in general, and specifically more of the young Hispanic population into Catholic schools, perhaps as a way of making sure that people are formed in the faith, as a way of helping to rejuvenate Catholic schools in the country. But Dr. Ospino, I wonder if you can suggest any sort of concrete methods for doing this. How do we go about making this a practical choice for young families and young children?
Well, certainly that's an important question. And let me just give you a little bit of a background. Today, you know, there are only 6,700-plus Catholic schools nationwide that are educating about 1.9 million, you know, children. And 75% of those children are Catholic. However, the Catholic school-age population in the United States is 14.5 million children. So even if we were to take all the kids who are in Catholic schools today, you know, and then bring only Hispanic kids, and if we were to build, you know, 20,000 Catholic schools, we would barely, you know, be able to educate half of the Hispanic Catholic population that is school age. So that's one of the challenges that we have, you know. So right now we cannot assume, I mean, we cannot go back in time to the days when 55% of school age Catholic children were in Catholic schools. You know, today we need to be more strategic. On the one hand, what we need to do is in those places where there are Catholic schools, let's make sure that we strengthen those Catholic schools and that we get as many Hispanic children as possible in them. So that's strategy number one. We cannot keep bleeding Catholic schools, closing them. I think that I get very saddened when I see that a Catholic school is closing, mindful that there is such a need and that there is this large population. The second strategy that I'm recommending is we got to figure out a new way of fostering more philanthropy to build Catholic schools in those places where Latinos, Latinas are, you know, particularly in the South and the West. We need to build Catholic schools, and we don't have to build these large, you know, buildings, you know, for 400, 500 Catholic children in the schools, but we need to start maybe starting with smaller buildings and more, you know, be more creative. And the third approach, you know, frankly, what I think is that we need to start imagining ways of providing Catholic education and Catholic faith formation outside of the Catholic school world. You know, we need to parishes need to be more involved. You know, we need to figure out better ways of reaching out to the Latino community and keeping young people in the church, because this is something that I write in the essay for America. You know, unfortunately, we are losing our Hispanic young people and our Hispanic children. 14 million of them, we lost them in the last few decades. You know, and these young people are the present and the future of Catholicism in this country.
Yeah, Dr. Ospino, you mentioned those concrete moves. Are there reasons that it's currently difficult to get that philanthropy, that money, to make these programs and these setups in the schools happen, or have we just not tried, or, you know, what are the barriers to, like, enacting that right away?
I think that one of the situations that I have observed vis-a-vis Catholic philanthropy in the United States is that there are many foundations and many wealthy Catholics who are willing to support and invest in Catholic education and similar initiatives that are completely unaware of the Hispanic reality, you know. So if we do not understand, you know, the demographic changes and the cultural changes that are taking place in the church, if Hispanic children and families are not on the radar screen of these great families and these great foundations that have the resources, they are not going to invest in them. So we need to really help educate the Catholic philanthropists in our country to invest more. But on the other hand, you know, there is already a growing body of Latino Catholics who are doing well professionally and in their business lives, you know. But these people need to develop the habit of philanthropy and invest in their own sisters and brothers as well. You know, the Irish did it, and the Italians did it, the Germans did it, and I think that it is time for a wave of Latino Catholic philanthropy, and that needs to be cultivated immediately.
Well, and you talk about understanding the culture that that you're trying to kind of cultivate. One interesting thing is, I think a lot of people might assume a certain, you know, percentage of the Hispanic Catholic population is due to immigration, and perhaps that's true, but that percentage might be smaller than folks might first assume. As you write in your article, 2/3 of Hispanic Catholics in the U.S. were born here, and I think you said 93% of the Hispanic Catholics under 18 were born here. So we're talking about American Catholics as well.
Absolutely, Carrie, and that's kind of one of the challenges. You know, we do not know well our own Catholic people and our sisters and brothers, so we continue to imagine, you know, Hispanic Catholics primarily as an immigrant population. Yet, only 1/3 of the Hispanic population is immigrant. You know, but these are the people who are coming to church, and anyway, you know, these are the people who are transforming the communities, and that's why we need to keep investing in this population. But as you say, you know, 2/3 of Latinos are U.S. born. So this second and third, fourth generation of Hispanic Catholics, they are as American as German-American Catholics and Irish-American
right.
Catholics and everybody else.
Right.
But if we continue to imagine Latinos as other group and not as part of the American body, Catholic body, then we are not going to make much progress.
So the challenge is to also, for those of us who are white, of Irish descent, I mean, is to rethink these things and to allow our own ideas, which we kind of inherit or, you know, somehow imbibed through osmosis, to be challenged. I mean, as you point out in this piece, that you know, when people are talking about, oh, Hispanics are the future of the church, and you point out, well, actually, they're past too. I mean, the first, like, non-indigenous language spoken in this country was Spanish, not English, right? They've been here for 500 years. And yet, is there some kind of, you know, informal segregation that happens that doesn't allow, so sort of the Catholics of Western European descent to, you know, interact with folks who are Hispanic and understand these realities?
Well, what I would say, Father Malone, is that more than segregation, or more than perhaps people kind of isolating themselves from one another, what I see is a little bit of resistance, mm-hmm. you know, nationwide. And there's resistance on the part of, you know, mainstream or predominantly white Catholics in terms to accepting that the church is changing. You know, it is a fact that it's changing, and other parts it already changed, you know. But people want to hold on to whatever idealized form of Catholicism they had. But also there's resistance on the part of Hispanic immigrants and other immigrants, you know, and their children, because, I mean, usually when these immigrants arrive, they go to neighborhoods, you know, where they feel most comfortable, where they can use the language, where they find their food, and where they find churches that serve them. But sometimes these groups, you know, find it hard to actually integrate, you know, more intentionally, into the larger body of Catholics, because there is the expectation that they have to assimilate or that they have to stop being who they are. So if we don't develop the, you know, what the bishops of the United States call intercultural competencies to build communities that are, you know, culturally diverse and where we honor what all the gifts that we all bring, you know, whether you're white or Hispanic or Asian, Black, Native American, our communities are going to remain divided.
Now, I wonder if you could talk a bit about, we have just a few minutes left, the innovative approaches that Hispanic Catholics have taken to evangelization. You write in your piece a bit about the Fifth National Encuentro of Hispanic Latino Ministry. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that process and what that means and what the rest of the church could learn from it.
Absolutely. So, I mean, Hispanic Catholics, you know, particularly many of the immigrants who arrive in the United States come from an experience of, you know, doing evangelization door to door. For instance, many have been influenced by small ecclesial communities in Latin America. So when people arrive in the United States, you know, many of them are just waiting for the opportunity to evangelize. Now, in the United States, there is the tradition of what's called the encuentros, no? These are major gatherings, no, preceded by processes of consultation and evangelization that began in 1972. You know, we have had four of those, and now we're in the process of the Fifth National Encuentro of Hispanic Ministry, which began early this year in 2017 in January. It's a four-year process, and the idea is that people would come together in small communities, in parishes and universities and schools, the organizations. They will go through a series of catechesis, reflections, and then after they do these reflections, they go out and do missionary work. They go and reach out to people who are lukewarm about their faith, or people who have left their faith, or people who are in the peripheries, as Pope Francis says. And then they come back, they share that experience, and then as they go through the process of reflection, what they do is they identify pastoral priorities for the church. And this is what the beauty of this is, you know. These are the priorities that are written by Hosman Ospino out of his desk,
right.
But it's the people identifying those priorities, and that's the Fifth Encuentro process. That's go through that.
That is pretty impressive. Dr. Hosman Ospino is associate professor of Hispanic ministry and religious education at Boston College. His piece is 10 Ways Hispanics Are Redefining American Catholicism in the 21st Century, which you can find at americamagazine.org. Dr. Ospino, thank you for being with us.
You're very welcome, Father Malone.
Okay, good day. Fascinating stuff. And very pleased to say that this is part of a three-year initiative on the part of America Media and America Magazine to examine these questions. And I am tremendously proud that we have J.D. Long Garcia, who we introduced to our listeners not too long ago, leading up our editorial efforts on this. And Dr. Ospino, of course, is going to join us as well to be part of this conversation, such an important conversation. So you've been listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. To find out more about everything that you heard about today, you can join us at americamagazine.org. You can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. And to subscribe to America, you can call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533. And as we proceed into Advent and the Christmas season, people should be writing down that number.
The perfect gift for friends and family, especially if you're interested in following up on what the bishops are saying at their meetings.
Right. Makes a perfect Advent gift, perfect Christmas gift, perfect ordinary time gift, you know.
Do you get a lot of Advent
seasons,
gifts?
Even for, say, the Feast of the Holy Family.
St. Nicholas Day is coming up.
Yeah, there you go. Stocking stuffer. It's a wonderful stocking
stuffer. In any event, that's 800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. For Kerry Weber and Father Eric Sundrup, I'm Father Matt Malone. Thank you and good day.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.